the drum circle tickets tomorrow. So while Freedom gets his show ready, I'm going to try to find what he wants me to read. So, stand by, everyone. Here is a message to all members of Native Hoop. To the original peoples of the Fourth World and all international press services, at high noon today, which was May 2nd. Oh, I just lost the screen. At high noon today, May 2nd, U.S. Army helicopters of the U.S. 7th Cavalry Air Division attempted to land their Black Hawk aircraft upon Lakota Sacred Burial Grounds in South Dakota. The presence of military aircraft from this unit, see more, is a sad and insulting reminder of the slaughter of more than 300 American Aboriginals on December 29, 1890, when soldiers of the U.S. 7th Cavalry gunned down more than 300 Aboriginal Minikanyu, Lakota refugee children, women, infants, and the elderly at what is now called Wounded Knee in South Dakota Indian Country. The military then left the bodies of their victims to decay unburied in the driving snow. According to reports from Indigenous Rights Movement radio host Wombly, this afternoon, Lakota resident Teresa Tubols was given less than 24 hours' notice that three U.S. Army 7th Cavalry helicopters would make a landing on the sacred burial grounds at Wounded Knee. As of this writing, the U.S. military was confronted by angry but peaceful and steadfast community resistance, as the Aboriginal people of the area have so far, according to reports from Lakota people on the ground, managed to prevent the aircraft from touching Indigenous ground. For all American Aboriginals of the Americas, this is a sacred area. This is the place where the promise of a people died while fleeing from a genocidal U.S. military unit hell-bent on liquidating the continent of its indigenous population. There has never been any official apology offered for this massacre, and the military awards bestowed upon the genocidal aggressors involved in this conflict still stand, as does a physical monument in honor of the U.S. Army killed during Custer's last stand against a defiant and united indigenous resistance to their own demise. The history of the U.S. Army 7th Cavalry is important to understanding the level of violence used against indigenous peoples. It is important to remember that after the U.S. 7th Cavalry officially ended the Indian Wars at home, they were then dispatched to do battle against indigenous Filipinos struggling to maintain their hard-won national independence from the colonialist Spanish. In other words, the U.S. War Department sent this very same unit to do overseas what was done here to the indigenous peoples of the Americas. In this historical light, it is only logical for indigenous peoples to assume that the Obama administration is attempting to make a political point out of this spectacle. Only, what sort of message are you sending by insulting and humiliating a people already suffering from 5 centuries of continuous pro-Europocentric anti-indigenous genocide? Please note the statement was sent throughout the internet today, and a call for support from AIM, A-I-M, of its chapters and support groups across America was issued. This domestic military action is a deliberate insult and an obvious message of ongoing colonialism, state-sponsored racism, and apathetic indigenous genocide to all indigenous peoples across the Fourth World, to the whole of the Lakota Dakota Nation, and to the indigenous residents of Pine Ridge and Wounded Knee. the symbolism of dispatching the 7th Cavalry to Wounded Knee in an attempt to land weapons of mass destruction on Aboriginal sacred ground tells us how little this government and this particular administration respects the people of Indian country and our significant historical perspective as survivors of the racist Euro-settler xenophobic purges waged against the Indian in the Americas. To make matters worse, this action comes on the heels of newly passed legislation in Arizona state that requires law officers to racially profile anyone they believe that looks or sounds or dresses like an illegal immigrant. A thinly veiled race law that directly affects both our indigenous sisters and brothers native to occupied Mexico as well as the Native American population of Arizona in the United States. Given that most indigenous peoples of the Americas share the same general physiotype and more often than not similar Spanish last names, the passage of this guideline will without a doubt lead to widespread abuses against that state's brown-skinned population. The legal door now opened. Texas and other states, led by neo-Confederate constituencies, are moving to pass their own anti-immigrant, anti-indigenous directives that will broadly affect anyone and everyone who could be perceived by the colonial European majority as a foreign invader. The Obama administration has shown America and the world that they are no different than any other previous U.S. government in their view, that the American Indian on both sides of the U.S. border is nothing more than a prop or tool to be displayed only when it is useful to promote the contemporary 21st century neocolonialist capitalist agenda. The Obama administration, an office headed by a man of African descent, has shamed itself and all those who have supported his candidacy in arrogantly dismissing the memory of our people interred at Wounded Knee by rubbing the military might of the historically anti-indigenous 7th Cavalry in our faces by forcibly entering Indian country in an attempt to land their machines of war on top of the bodies of our ancestral dead. Clearly, the culture war against the American Indian is not over. Welcome to the new American century. Pass this on. We must get the word out. Let everyone know. Contact your local media like us. Tell them the local media in Rapid City, South Dakota, haven't even mentioned this in the news. So typical for Rapid City, South Dakota media. And if they did post it, it would not be the truth. I tried to contact the Rapid City Urinal. Lots of love. This is sent by James Magaska Swan, AIM, Black Hills, South Dakota. You can get more information by going to nativehoop.ning.com. Now I will turn the show over to the rest of the crew. This has been Coral Reef for Free the Land, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thanks, Coral. What's your feeling about that, Coral?
I'm really shocked, but what I've got to do is, you know, let people know that these kind of things are not being put on, you know, the headlines or anything. So it's about more the same old where the immigrants, the people that we made treaties with, all those kinds of things are just kept, you know, like the U.S. just looks at them as if they're just cast aside, and we can just like shove it under the rug. Like there's no honor. We don't have any kind of respect. We don't have any, you know, like claims to owing anyone anything. And it's not even in the front of the news. So, you know, all the blame is put on peoples that we don't know what they're doing. It's all military these days. It's like local government. They're trying to blame someone they don't know. They jump to conclusions, and it's the blame game. Should I introduce our other guest here, Buffalo?
Hey. Anyway, first thing I want to do, could you pop the headphones up a little bit more for me?
Uh-huh.
Okay, thanks. Oh, that's good. That's beautiful. Oh, I get to hear all the air conditioning on now. Yeah, first thing I want to speak to is tomorrow's drum circle near the farmer's market, no longer at the farmer's market. Okay, I have somewhat of a prepared statement. This is my understanding, because they are in the ultimate anarchic collective, so to speak, and it's hard to get any, but I believe this speaks for a large number of them. Due to the expansion of the Wednesday downtown Santa Cruz Farmers Market, the traditional drum circle has been forced to move away from its spot at the same parking lot to avoid immediate confrontation with the police in the market. The location picked is the parking lot across the street from Jack's Burgers. It's nearer the street, easily visible to the police who often complained about drinking and drugs in the more recessed site originally used. It's also away from the market. This, I believe, and I can only speak for myself on this, is a positive response to various complaints by other interested parties. Last Wednesday, a police supervisor stopped by to discuss noise complaints, according to him numbering 12, but perhaps 12 calls by one or two businesses. The compromise offered by the police supervisor, apparently consorting with the city, although it's unknown what the city is thinking, I know they don't like the drum circle, is simply away from here. That's where they want them. And if this sounds familiar, it's the same rejoinder used by the white settlers in discussion with Native Americans, paraphrased by a native a long time ago as, "We move and we move, but you continue to say, you're too close, move farther away," and in the early 1900s by a modern Indian is, "You make us move so often, why don't you just put wheels on us and wheel us about?" The police supervisor, as a compromise, suggested the beach, cold and remote, or a local park, San Lorenzo. San Lorenzo's historically been a source of noise complaints even when children play due to senior citizen housing across the street. The other location, Santa Cruz Town Clock, in the middle of the heaviest vehicular traffic part of Santa Cruz. None of these sites are acceptable. An unofficial counteroffer was made offering time constraints, and it was just to see if the city and police were willing to compromise, as none of the drummers really want time constraints or any constraints whatsoever. I received no response and a blank stare from the supervisor, Officer Harms, who was undoubtedly delivering an ultimatum disguised as compromise. The drummers will be at the same site tomorrow across from Jack's, despite the possibility of police action such as removal or ticketing. I want to make a shout out to all Santa Cruz locals. It's time to build a larger community. They're attempting to break us. They're playing the block party as being part of an anarchic window smashing action, which was most likely not the case, and they're attempting to divide and conquer our community. This is a shout out regarding a drum circle, the last vestige, as far as I can see, of countercultural community in Santa Cruz, a community that they've been seriously trying to destroy in this town over the last 35 years I've been here. This is a shout out. It includes the Santa Cruz veterans. They were recently displaced from their county usurped and operated meeting hall under spurious and really suspicious circumstances. You all come on down to the farmer's market tomorrow for donuts and coffee. music and merriment. Bring a drum, flute, trumpet, whatever you got. I bang my spoon against a bicycle. Let's get it on. We need to take a stand as a community. This drum circle essentially cuts across all socioeconomic segments of Santa Cruz society. There's surfers, there's retired people, there's Chicanos from Watsonville. We all show up. It's our way of communing. Be there. Thank you.
Thanks, Buffalo. Now we have a song.
And that starts at about what times?
2:30, 3-ish.
Thank you.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't back down. Well, I know what's right. I got just one life. In a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
That should be interesting tomorrow at the drum circle. We'll see what happens. Are they gonna be at the same spot across from? Are they gonna be at the same spot across from Jack's?
Yeah, that's correct. They'll be at the same spot across the street from Jack's. It's easily visible from the seat. It's amazing considering there's a narrow sidewalk right there.
It's not as good as the other spot.
No, actually, in a way, it works out quite well. There was very little blockage of the sidewalk, and I didn't see too many frowny faces last week, except Officer Harms. The first week it occurred, where they had the new location, towards dusk, there was a guy in a leisure suit just sort of watching nearby, watching the drummers for about 15 minutes or so, and before he left, he leaned into the circle and threw $40 in. Hopefully one of our local businessmen, or perhaps someone, perhaps someone from over the hill. One of the more interesting things I've seen regarding the drummers over the years, a number of years ago, all the drummers were accumulated at the top of the mall on Thanksgiving because of the meal at the Vets Hall, which may not happen this year if they manage to keep the Vets Hall shut. Anyway, I had gone into Lulu Carpenter's to buy a cup of coffee, and the police were watching all these drummers. There were these, what I call, spandex bikers. They'd probably biked from over the hill or maybe from Aptos, a light traffic day and all that. And they'd gone into Lulu's for a cup of coffee. When it got to be their turn, and there was one girl along with them, the two guys looked at each other and said, "Hey, where'd so-and-so go?" And one of the other guys said, "Oh, she's probably over dancing with the drummers." Point being, when you live your life in a sterile QB to make your way through life, people come here to see the counterculture. I think the business community of Santa Cruz has their heads absolutely up their ass.
That's right.
In regard to that. And they're refusing to accept the fact that the only thing that makes Santa Cruz unique, now that they have Urban Outfitters and Froyo shops and the failed Cereality store, I can't believe that. Does anybody get up, eat breakfast in Santa Cruz? And besides, I think I've seen one of those at an airport somewhere along the line. But these businesses all have one thing in common. They have deep pockets, and generally they don't fail. Allowing Santa Cruz's business community to not have any sort of culture downtown, also to not have any valid business plan whatsoever. And they're just running their little shopping mall, attempting to sterilize it. The people that come here, that they complain no longer come downtown and just go to the beach and go home, that's because there's nothing downtown to
nothing
see.
Distinctive anymore.
Yeah. They proceeded to attempt to culturally denude this town, and all they really succeeded in doing was getting rid of all the gentler, mellower people, leaving at times quite a cohort of junkies, winos, and speed freaks who tend to have some loose affiliation with counterculture all the way back to the 60s when I was a 14-year-old kid on the streets of New York. But when you have a million countercultural mellower types and a couple of junkies and speed freaks, it just really doesn't matter a whole lot. But you know, they've succeeded in upsetting that balance.
You know, I think that's absolutely right. Part of it is the rents, too. The middle class is kind of getting squeezed out. Only the very wealthy can afford to live here, and the homeless.
Well, hell, they got rid of their working class. They made them jobless and homeless. And unlike me, who's an old hippie and doesn't really get fazed by that, most working class hero types don't want to be jobless and homeless. You can see what happened in places like Detroit, which no one bothered to do job development for. And now you have streets littered with just junk and broken glass and abandoned houses and a lot of alcohol and drug problems that really, in a lot of ways, didn't pre-exist. The powers that be don't care about the workers of America. I think that's quite clear.
And May 1st showed itself by having that kind of a demo about that.
Yeah, I was at the block party. It was quite a party.
You anarchist, you.
Yeah, well, I have a severely scathing critique of what came after, which I may or may not get around to. But I will point out that the people that did commit that action afterwards managed to commandeer an event that was intended to be a community-building exercise and essentially created a scenario, unlike the way I visualized it as a participant, that, God, I wish they did this every month like Critical Mass. It's a great exercise in community. Now it can never happen right ever again, and I hope the people that did that are really, really happy with their self-centered selves.
I think it was successful in Watsonville. They had a good workers' day demonstration on March.
I understand that Asheville, North Carolina, which in a way is a microcosm. My dad lived there till he passed, and it has quite a little countercultural scene going on. I understand they had a similar disturbance in Asheville, too. There's a major clash between the have and have-nots, and then you get all the kids in the middle of the mix that came from affluent families over in Research Triangle
there
Park.
There was the failed car bomb in Manhattan.
Yeah, they got that guy quick enough. False flag or not, the guy I ripped commentaries for in the morning stated on his news piece that the guy claimed he was trained, or the Pakistani Taliban took credit for it, and the guy I ripped commentaries and news for in the morning basically stated, if this is what it's coming to, that they're sending badly trained people over here en masse just to do things like put together something that isn't even going to work, but creates a lot of disturbance and havoc, and police statism, we're in a lot of trouble.
When we had Katrina and they had the National Guard come over, they didn't have
Blackwater, don't forget Blackwater.
No.
how could we forget XC? They've got another name now, too.
Well, another thing the anarchists got to watch out for in that looting, like in Katrina, they shoot looters.
Oh, right? Yeah.
It's legal and accepted. And
absolutely.
Just a good use of, approved use of violence in this country.
A word to the wise, just breaking a window can get you shot in some places. And I'm 56 years old, and I got to tell you, we have enough martyrs. There's a time and a place for violence and property destruction, and a community building event is not the appropriate time and place.
So I understand that there were no gunshots on Saturday night.
Oh, no. I'm not saying...
I was surprised, though.
Yeah. The response to someone breaking a window could be violent and severe, but I am a veteran of the New York City anti-war movement in the 60s.
You're also a yippie, right?
Yeah, and what came after and a little bit of what came before and just kind of kept going with it. But just speaking to the general nature of Santa Cruz's police department, not counting any intelligence agencies or FBI or anything like that, in New York, at a demonstration, all you had to do was touch one of their barricades and they'd club you to the ground. Mm. Don't ever forget that. You're living in a very gentle place. By most major city standards, you wouldn't get away with these doing something like that without major reprisal and perhaps getting shot. Absolutely. And you really need to take that into account because I don't want to have to play amateur medic on anybody anymore.
Well, I got some cuts on the anarchists. Anyone who wants to call in, the phone number here, what is it, Coral?
You don't know?
I don't remember.
Well, one of them's
four. I'm so bad with phone numbers.
Okay. There's two numbers, 427-3772. That's the best one right now. If we get two of you on the line, though, I'll give you another number. Anyway, this is Free the Land Show.
And we're talking about anarchism.
So we'd love to hear what you have to say, if you were at the event, or if you like happen to be close by and you got any first-hand knowledge of what happened. If you want to talk about that, that was on May Day, downtown.
May Day, May Day, May Day.
Yeah, May Day. What does that mean?
International distress signal.
Huh.
Via voice, as opposed to SOS on Morse code.
Yeah, it's Law Day, the traditional May Day, Workers' Day.
International Worker Solidarity Day.
Yeah.
Anniversary of the Haymarket riots, which...
workers were killed.
Yeah. The International Harvester was having a major strike, and somebody tossed a bomb. And in the process of doing that, they not only managed to kill Albert Parsons, who was a well-known anarchist figure, but in the long run, and again, I want all my Black Bloc friends to pay attention to this, it did not create a revolution. What it caused in the long run by the early 1900s was basically the destruction of the internationalist labor movement as the police suppression came down fast and heavy on them. Finished off by World War I, where they accused the internationalist unions of being associated with the enemy because they were not going the anti-fascist line.
Yeah, you've been here a long time now?
I've been here 35 years. And honestly, in reality, I think those old conservative jackasses did a much better job of running this town than the current crop of so-called progressives. Really, they're only economically progressive do, if only because their ethics held still.
I wouldn't even call them progressives anymore.
'90s. They're economic progressives is what they are. They're progressively figuring out ways to make more money.
Right.
Which I want to read this because it's a personal experience from working downtown that has to do with smearing Sub Rosa and smearing the block party people because of the acts of a few. A few years ago, after the fatal stabbing of a local bar patron across the street from the Red Room, a business at the time I was working in, I shot of, I spoke with the owner who I used to work for quite a few years ago when she owned a restaurant on them, when it was a mall, Pacific Garden Mall, and the street actually had curves in it and things.
Yeah.
The conversation went like this. Now, I'm not going to use her name, although anybody that's familiar with the Red Room probably knows who she is. I've been meaning to talk to you about that surly crowd hanging out outside your place. You know, I'm really not scared of too much, but they make me nervous, and I've been meaning to talk to you. You really need to get some security people who know what they're doing, not just some 20-some, oversized 20-somethings who can read IDs. I expected something like this to happen. Her response was stunning and illustrates the hypocrisy of painting the block party as a riot because a few individuals used it for cover for their own activities. She said about a fatal stabbing within eyesight right across the street in the Sentinel Printers parking lot. She said, it didn't happen on my property. Well, the property damage and destruction didn't happen during the block party. And another thing, no justice, no peace. That's not a wish. That's an immutable law of nature, like gravity. And it applies in spades to a city that intentionally displaced its working class, making mass numbers of them jobless and homeless by policy. The city of Santa Cruz is still in violation of the state housing law. Then they criminalized every little bit of the resultant behavioral problems, and it turned its downtown into a sterile shopping mall for the affluent who never really came in any significant number, leading to the scapegoating of panhandlers, cigarette smokers, wireless internet users. If this city didn't have someone to scapegoat, I don't think they'd know what to do. And you know what that makes them? That makes them fascists. There are quite a few people in Santa Cruz, California, who despite their abhorrence of the actions of a small group of what were apparently provocateurs, don't feel sorry ultimately for what happened at all. I, for one, cordially invite the FBI to investigate the city government of Santa Cruz and perhaps indict them under the RICO Act for fiduciary and other forms of governmental malfeasance, such as a continual creation of patently unconstitutional laws targeting the homeless and disenfranchised, enforced without any consideration for those laws, apparently illegalities by the local courts in such a manner that those laws never proceed to a higher court for oversight and modification and striking down.
Yeah, there could be some frustration that the anarchists are feeling about people being arrested and then for ridiculous infractions going to court, getting a judge that doesn't follow the law, and you get no justice.
I, for one, I'm skeptical about whether the people that did this actually feel the rage of a homeless or disenfranchised person. On the other hand, I understand the rage, and I understand because I see it in the stabbing, youth-on-youth stabbings in Santa Cruz. I see a lot of misunderstanding here about who the real enemy is. People are being misled. Red, blue, east side, west side. Like I said, I'm from New York. I'm from Brooklyn. Let me get something straight here. This town isn't big enough to have an east side and a west side. And we all got to work together. And that's a call to the drum circle, too. We all got to get together as a community because they're attempting to divide us and conquer us. And I don't want to be too divisive with black bloc people and things like that. But I think they're really... I think they really need to analyze their actions and the results of them. Breaking things because you think they'll get fixed right. This is a similar philosophy to what the neocons did by attempting to break the U.S. government and Constitution and then go to the constitutional conservative and say, look, you were right. Big government doesn't work without ever indicating that they...
I believe we have a caller here.
Hey, this
Okay, you want to say that to Lee on the air? I'll put you on for a second.
Buffalo.
This is Buffalo Lee. Okay, just a second. Okay, call him Buffalo. Just a second.
Let me know if my mic's
off. He turned his mic off. Put his mic back.
Hey, here I am. Hey, Lee, thanks a lot, man. Great rehearsing that with you this afternoon about the fascists, man. The mentality of this town.
I know who's calling. Hey.
This is Drummer Dave.
Yeah, Drummer Dave. I'll see you tomorrow at the Circle. And I am making that shout out to everybody in Santa Cruz. You know, we need to build a bigger community because otherwise, you know, we all hang together or we all hang separately. So to
That's
speak.
Right.
That's correct, man. Tomorrow, man, somewhere around 2, man. You all know where it is.
Uh-huh. It's visible from the street.
You know, we don't break glass when we play drums.
No, occasionally you lose a skin, though. Occasionally you lose a skin. I've seen that happen, but look at the bright side. At least the cow's already dead, huh?
That's right. You guys have a great night. I'm still listening to the show. Thanks a lot, everybody. Peace, Santa Cruz.
Gang
we don't
you.
Break glass. We're drummers.
Glass.
I'll see you tomorrow, Dave.
All right, see you, Dave.
Okay, you can call in also, 427-3772.
You know, another interesting thing that happens when you do violence, it causes an immediate backlash. Mm-hmm. I mean, the police are already asking, we need more cops, more money for our budget.
More guns, yeah. More training. They'll get more money to run intelligence programs and such thing. And Santa Cruz has always been on the forefront of police intelligence anyway. One of the books that Sub Rosa does not have on their shelves, a book I read years ago, was called The Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. It was done by a group of people, a collective, that did a history of the United States police departments. Santa Cruz had a prominent place in that book. And now, this book was written in the 1970s. Santa Cruz was one of the first cities to have what they call the enhanced 911 system, with a heads-up display that gave them a record of calls from a given phone number, maybe displayed a map and such things. It also came with a rather elaborate associative database, which by now, I'm sure Oracle's databases and such probably put to shame. But at the time, it was state of the art. This town has always been a test bed for police suppression activities for various and sundry reasons that I'm not aware of. But we don't. Wow. Is that one of those anarchist songs?
Association? Oh, really now?
Chaos.
Oh, I mean chaos?
Anarchism is, it's participatory, so that means you don't want to hear a speech about it, but talk about it. And I agree with that, with what I assume is the understanding on that, so I won't say much. Anarchism covers lots of different things. If there's one leading principle which unifies them, it's a simple one, that it's based on the assumption that any authoritarian or any structure of authority and domination has to justify itself. None of them are self-justifying, whether they're in individual relations or international affairs or, you know, the workplace or whatever. If they have a burden of proof to bear, and if they can't bear that burden, which they usually can't. They're illegitimate and should be dismantled and
another anarchy song.
I was a teenage anarchist looking for revolution. I had the style, I had the ambition. Read all the authors, I knew the Russellians. There was a war. Looking for revolution. Do you remember when you were young and you wanted to set the world on fire? Do you remember when you were young and you wanted to set the world on fire? I was a teenage and I
already been. He has that distinctive voice there. It's unmistakable.
I go under a number of acronyms. The Buffalo Amongst Wolves, because I'm doing the quick step through the minefield of the police state, just like a buffalo surrounded by wolves might, just lashing out at him to keep him at bay. I also call myself Razor with the Z-E-R.
Mm.
More recently, I found my feminine side as Auntie Imperial.
Now, why would you do that?
Because I can be one mean mama.
Yeah, well, I heard mean old men have too much estrogen.
Actually, you see the bald spot? Testosterone, but I'm like one of those Russian swimmers or something. I'm not really gender specific anymore.
Well, getting back to the anarchy here, I mean, I'm opposed to violence myself.
I'm opposed
to
gender.
Violence works. Violence has worked for
the gender doesn't.
Well,
gender doesn't work.
Depends on your gender.
Yeah, really.
But I mean, violence has worked for the people in power. Look at the police; they're all carrying guns. We have a military. Violence does work, but the problem when you use violence, you turn into your enemy.
Yeah, and in reality, as you can see from, I believe it's Ganser syndrome in psychology, the victims start to imitate the ones they hate, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be really careful because, by definition, that's reactionary.
Yeah, there's a political backlash. I mean, at some point, you know, if they may be planning something very soon here. I think if they try it again, the police are going to be well prepared this time.
See, that's my sadness about it. I went to that. Now, I'm not a big partier anymore. I'm older and I go to bed early. I'm not that old. I'm 56. But my mob scene days are done. I did years and years of live sound at some really big shows. Did it for a bunch of years. I'm involved in the anti-war movement in the 60s. I've seen my mob scene. So generally, I don't go out drinking and partying at night. And I don't go to mass demonstrations, avoid WTOs. And I'm just more an observer and commentator nowadays. But I went to this block party, and it was awesome. And a good time was being had by all.
This was a Saturday.
On Saturday.
It was promoted as a block party.
And it was.
And Take Over the Streets was kind of in there, but it wasn't.
And it was.
So they had cover, basically, of a normal kind of gathering. No permit, but still
it was just a harmless gathering.
It
was just... Part of the propaganda about that 50-minute police response time, the police in Santa Cruz generally don't respond to roving demonstrations that wander up and down streets unless something serious is going on.
No, they wait a few months, then send you a ticket.
As a matter of fact,
like they did to Wes.
One police car got trapped at the corner of Church and Pacific as everybody was moving up the mall. I don't know who is at the wheel, but I had already passed. Apparently a couple of people pounded on the car, so he turned on his whooper, flashed the lights, lurched the car, which is standard police procedure. Don't bang on the cars and stand. Whoever's standing in front of it might lose their knees. This is the way they break themselves out of crowds. They don't intend to run you over, but they're just saying, get the fuck out of the way.
Right.
That was the extent of any sort of major problems I was seeing. I saw people out for a Saturday night party literally bopping in their cars to the music as the DJs went by. One guy got trapped, just in case you think this is some sort of mob scene, one guy got trapped at the backside of the library alongside the Red Room trying to make a right turn onto Cedar Street to head like down Pergolesi Way. And not only was I actually able to get some of the crowd moved aside single-handedly to allow this guy to make a right turn, but a couple of people in the crowd just voluntarily assisted in that. It was not a riot or a mob scene or even unruly any more than a bunch of dancers in the street might be.
Although Buffalo, it was not a permit, just like the New Year's parade. And Wes has gotten a ticket for being in a parade that was not a permit. So someone could give you a ticket. You may get one in the mail if you had an address.
115 Coral Street, baby. You send it, I'll ignore it. It can go to collection. You can ruin my credit rating.
It's too late for that. That's another thing about the singing downtown. I mean, the middle class has to pay those tickets. So, like, Coral can't play her organ on the mall anymore because she's going to get a $250, $400
or
ticket.
Or if you have a driver's license, they can potentially
take away your driver's license if you don't pay.
I don't have any
of
those things.
What if I wear a black mask?
There you go. But the thing is, I mean, this kind of
I just had a hot flash, but we won't go there. I'm getting too old for it. Never mind.
These kind of musical acts are eliminated from the mall then. They're not, you know, and it may be, arguably they may be better because, you know, they could probably, or you're going to left with the people that are out there panhandling mostly, maybe not as musically. So I just have a feeling that some of the acts have gone downhill since the police have been enforcing these music.
It varies during at certain times a year.
That's true. People who aren't aware that we're a police state here come in from out of town.
Yeah.
But oops.
What I have seen happen over the years, and it's one of the reasons why Santa Cruz is such a sociological problem at some different levels at the way the local community might see it. What's happened over the years, as they turned this into a full-fledged shopping mall instead of a downtown with some shopping related to tourism and all that, they turned on the heat full time. When I first got here, the police basically did a sweep twice a year, just before the tourists came and just after they left. And in between, they would just beat down any sort of behavioral problems. I don't mean that in the literal sense, but like beating down fires as it arose. When they turned that into a full-time pursuit, and started making all these laws that were full-time enforceable on people regarding bogus little issues like where they could sit and where they couldn't sit, mm-hmm. how long you'd be on a bench. Basically what happened was all the gentler, milder set left.
Exactly.
And in a society, and I've been there since 14 years old, like I said, I'm 56 now, I saw the similar thing happen in New York when the Back to the Land movement happened after Woodstock, because I stuck around New York because the war was still on and that's where the action was, and all the hippies and less politicized moved up to Vermont and around mm-hmm. Woodstock or whatever. Same thing, lots of junkies, winos, and speed freaks and just fewer, and it upsets some sort of natural balance. There's some sort of symbiotic yeah. relationship at some level between people who have those sort of problems in the counterculture, maybe because we're not as fast to turn them into the police or more helpful and sharing and things. And when you have a million hippies and a couple of junkies and winos and speed freaks, it just doesn't matter a whole hell of a lot.
So those hippies are so mellow.
Ostracism and all those cultural tools used in small in cultures uh-huh. work. But all those people got displaced. Last year I saw some kids come here from Asheville. They seemed like really cool kids, right? And within a day they had two tickets, one for sleeping up by the beach and another one for dog on the mall or something, and they left and they'll probably never come back. Saw a couple of other kids asked me if I had any weed for sale, and although I'm really on the consumer end of all this nowadays, they look like clean-cut traveling type kids, and I figured we went somewhere, I smoked a ball with them and sold them $5 worth of my stash.
No.
And they were telling
no
me...
No admissions, please.
And they were telling me they were having a problem. The problem was they couldn't find a place to hang out and panhandle to get on down the road, because you have all these serial panhandlers who take the same spots
and there aren't very many of those spots available. And there's less every day.
And those serial panhandlers, and I know a few of them personally, and fuck you if you don't like it, you get $1,000 a month SSI check and you're all compulsives or have drug habits and you're just taking up space that could be used a lot of the time by someone that's actually trying to experience life or in need or something like that. And in a way, the city shot themselves in the foot on that, just the way they flushed the move along law with the Street Musicians Guild down, where every so often you moved. The police have no interest in telling a panhandler, you sat there long enough, let someone else sit here.
That's not why they do it. They do it because they can't completely eliminate it, because you have a constitutional right to ask for donations. So they try and it just shrink the area through time, place, and manner restrictions. But those have to be adequate. And it's gotten to the point where there isn't enough room to panhandle. It's not adequate anymore.
It's a combination of problems. You have an increase in the number of people that, how shall you say, have subsidized incomes, because they're really the only people that can afford to like live here.
You're either very wealthy, you're on subsidized housing, or you're completely homeless.
And they've bumped all the traveler types that tend to come through here at certain times a year because of their tendency to sit mm-hmm. there and panhandle. Because $1,000 a month, and I really don't understand it, because if you're on Section 8 housing, you're paying $200 or $300 a month for rent, and the rest is subsidized, and you really have plenty of cash left over, unless you've got some really nasty drug habit going on. And I don't know quite know how to resolve that issue. When I used to panhandle when I was younger, I was always a walking panhandler. I walk up to people.
You can't walk up to people. That's begging.
No. You can keep your distance. There's a respectable distance that you keep and say, I'm having visions of a cheeseburger. It's just as legal saying it at someone from a distance as holding a sign.
You can't walk up to people. That's a state law.
Within arm's reach, it's definitely out of question. And I don't know what the technicality of the state law is.
Yeah, you have to be standing somewhere, and they can walk away if they want. You can't follow them or go up to them and the stuff like that.
Obviously, I'm talking about in a passing sort of way. Mm-hmm. Man, can you spare... I'm trying to get... I did it the other morning. I was 50 cents short on a cup of coffee, and I walked by someone downtown early in the morning. As I'm walking by, I goes, brother, can you help me out? I need another 50 cents for a cup of coffee. That's perfectly legal, just as long as you let them walk away, right?
Right.
But you get a traveler with big backpacks on and things like that, it becomes a lot more problematic to walk around. They really need the rest. And I'm pleading to the serial panhandlers of Santa Cruz to give it a break and let someone else sit there for a while, I guess, for want of a better way of putting it.
And once money's involved, they're going to act the same way that the city fathers do. You know, there's money here. I'm not giving it up. Get out of my town.
I know one guy. Just to show you the way it can work sometime and that panhandlers aren't that much different than the rest of American society, I know one guy sits there and panhandles every day, gets $1,000 a month SSI check, and when he gets his check, what he does, he goes out and buys brand new expensive camping gear. He was programmed to be a good consumer in American society, and he's not buying the Ferrari, and he doesn't have a mortgage payment, but he's going to spend that check. And what he panhandles for, basically, is to go see movies because he's a well-programmed member of American society.
You could be programmed. Could be a panhandler.
Yeah. Just because you're getting an SSI check doesn't mean you're not a good American consumer. He's feeding it back into the economy. You know.
Speaking of feeding things, what do you think's going to happen when they start putting
panhandling machines,
panhandling meters?
it's been automated now.
Okay, my take on it is panhandling is not a good lifestyle, just the way drinking isn't a good lifestyle. It's okay to do once in a while. Sometimes you got to panhandle. But the idea of spending your life as a panhandler is not a good idea. It's a good sociology and psychology study for some people, and you learn it, and you get over it, and you get on with your life, and you figure out, hopefully, some other way to make an income if there is, and locally, recently, there isn't.
There isn't.
Okay.
There's an issue I'm interested in. I mean, instead of panhandling, selling goods.
I want to stick to that parking meter issue.
Oh, yeah, right.
Or panhandler meter issue for a second, though. I'm more concerned with... if one of those meters did take in enough money to actually get a homeless person off the street and up and running, and there's enough working homeless around here that are more than one of the speed freaks I know, half spun speed freak, one day I said, after he was collecting cans online, I said, God, you guys are so industrious, they ought to set up a recycling center for you. And he goes, yeah, everybody wants to work, right?
Yeah.
If that meter money actually went to getting a panhandler off the street and into something more sufficient for their lives, I'm all for it. But I don't see where the oversight's going to come from to make sure the money gets spent in that manner. I don't even know who's going to be overseeing the money, and I suspect it'll just
Danielle.
Be
not much money.
Who's Danielle?
It's very little money.
Ask Curb Hugger. He said
the primary reason is to provide, 14 feet away, you can't pan. Is to take away panhandling sites.
That's essentially what it does. But as I
just
said,
like the penguins,
if that money went to actually servicing homeless people, there is some sort of trade-off in there. I'm not seeing that they're going to do that. If anything, they're just going to use it to hire another
cop, police
officer or something like that. And I want it spelled out in detail what they plan on doing with that money, or I think it's just a sham.
It's just a scam. It's a scam.
Have they spelled it out in detail?
Supposed to glean $1,700 a year is all.
100 or 70,000?
Oh, that's not even
enough. That's nothing.
That's not even enough to pay your food bill for a year. You know?
The maintenance
and
of the...
it doesn't cover food.
It doesn't pay the maintenance of the meter, does it?
It's just a joke. It's a fucking joke. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mentioned. We haven't talked about the Under the Levee magazine pamphlet that was in the news box. We won't read it on the air.
Yeah, since we'll read it on the air.
It could get us in trouble. It does could. Give advice on how to survive a riot. And this appeared within a week before the riot.
Survive,
so there may be a connection between the two.
Survival skills. I mean, if I broke out with eco defense right now and started reading it on the air, how to sabotage police cars and rolling equipment, could they really do anything to me about it? I'm just reading out of a published book.
Well, this is news. We're not going to read from it. But it also does cover a lot of Santa Cruz topics in depth. These are not outside agitators if the same people wrote that.
On the other hand, I doubt if they're homeless people.
Probably
and I
not.
And I understand there's some level of overlap. I come from a background that's lower middle class. My mom, although she was a single mom, was a New York City public school teacher. And she didn't get rich. And we had, you know, but we always had food on the table and things like that. And yet, I developed a social consciousness about other issues like the poor and the war in Vietnam. So I'm not saying there isn't an overlap, but calling it under the levee,
yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
That is, I don't know if they aren't trying to take the mantle from people that actually do sleep under bridges or anything. Again, I wouldn't recommend.
They cover some homeless issues. They cover the parking, the spare change meters, and
but under those bridges is such a cold, drafty place.
Mm-hmm.
Really, under the bridges is not a good place to sleep. You better out in the open, just the way in cold. Well, maybe if you have to stay dry, but other than that, it's much better to sleep out in open fresh air than sleep under one of those cruddy bridges.
Well, it's actually legal to sleep in San Lorenzo during the day, right? You can sleep during the day in the parks in Santa Cruz.
Don't lay out your sleeping bag. That's blanket bound.
Well, we saw in the Anna Miguel trial that they were wearing bedding and stuff, and they still got off. It was the fact that you had all your possessions around that made it closer to a campground.
This is where it comes into what's, you know, legal under the Constitution, you know, the way the laws are interpreted. For instance, someone told me one day that if I put all my stuff down on the ground,
mm-hmm.
they can cite me for setting up a camp.
That's what they tried to do in that trial.
Okay, whether they're entitled to do that legally is a matter for an appeals court.
Didn't fly with Volkman. He was a very good judge
on
this. He said, this is the middle of the day.
They tried to do that to a drummer. It was for leaving it unattended.
Well, the unattended thing has a different set of circumstances with the advent of terrorist bombings and Homeland Security.
Right.
What do you want them to do? They blew up, what do they call them, one of those the geotag things that people do. They found one of them in the little triangle park at the bottom of the Locust Street Hill in like an old ammo can, and they didn't know what it was, so they called in the bomb squad and blew it up. This could happen to your personal luggage if you leave it
laying around.
There goes
your backpack, Buffalo. Boom.
Right. So the leaving stuff unattended, besides the fact that there's a lot of desperate people around that take anything that isn't bolted down, generally isn't a good idea.
Yeah.
And I travel with a sleeping bag and a backpack and a jacket that's often too heavy for the weather conditions. And we're like turtles, man, and you got to keep moving. And it's your kit, and you got to be proud of your kit. And when you move, move it with you unless someone's watching it for you. It's much better that way all the way around, really.
Mm-hmm. Here's that 7-minute pause, I guess.
Pregnant pause?
What's that? I'll get another song. Back to the anarchist.
We're here live. You can call in.
At 101.1 FM.
Freakradio.org streaming.
That's the legal side.
Oh.
I thought we were at the ocean side.
She'll wear your shoes, and she'll walk your mile with eyes that burning, a tear-gas smile.
is good.
Yeah, you know, I guess everybody's down on the anarchist here, but I want to say that I thought it was very professionally carried off. I mean, they put that article or that pamphlet out last week.
They were coordinated.
They were very coordinated. According to the Sentinel, there were some police calls of shooting somewhere else to divert resources.
Although one of the guys they picked up, and honestly, I don't know if he was involved
with the people at all. No.
But the guy they picked up, a fleeing felon with a burglary and all that, he's the classic example of a police agent.
Yeah, stooge.
He'll say anything to get his parole term shortened. This is traditional. How did he make his living again? He claimed, and this is something I heard directly, he claimed when asked in court whether how he made his living by the judge, he said he worked at Sub Rosa.
Yeah.
And I laughed directly at Phil Gomez from TV station. I laughed in his face and said, he makes his living doing that? They're all volunteers, even the people that work behind the counter. And someone will need to call this guy because he's obviously making it up as he goes along.
Yeah.
And none of the people at Sub Rosa, to the best of my knowledge, know him.
They're taking heat on this, too. I mean, they're getting blamed because somebody picked up a flyer there, and those flyers were all over town.
Those flyers were all over town.
Yeah.
I gave some out. I was leaving them in musician boxes because I thought they might show up for a street party.
That's what we're talking about, the counterproductivity of it, is somebody else gets blamed. They get more cops. People get scared, and let's give the cops all the money they
want.
Even
if they arrest someone who isn't involved. The guy could have been a pure clinker. He could have been totally uninvolved in it all. They could have drove him down there in a car and then tagged him and said, you're it. And somewhere in the background, he knows he's going to get his parole cut short. And this is what destructive actions put themselves up against because you have no way of defending yourself against something like that. Mm-hmm. You already have public perception working against
you. The other arrest,
you.
I think, was a homeless person who was intoxicated and had paint on him that they were using. He was probably just, you know, got in the way of a spray can.
He probably got in the way of them and just...
But they were well organized. They showed up on a side... You were there. They showed up on a side streak all masked with their clubs or whatever, or torches.
I was ahead of them when they showed up. I was down by Camouflage, and by the way, the girls from Camouflage were outside dancing to the music, so don't tell me that all the businesses have a problem with something like a block party.
They can be
the
ticketed for participating in a non-permit event.
That. But somewhere along the line, the people with the torches showed up off a side street.
3 months from now.
Yeah, absolutely. Bersoni's working on
the
ticket
mail,
right now.
You know, comes in the mail, and the ticket has already gone to Warren or something like that.
That's what happened to Michelle. No, you showed up for a trial. No, you're already guilty. It's a month ago. We gave you the wrong date. That's the justice in Santa Cruz.
I don't know where the people came from. None of them really seemed like Black Bloc people. It just seemed like the masks I was seeing. There were a couple of people wearing like bandanas over their face, but honestly, it's a fashion statement more than it's anything active in reality.
Yeah, I was seeing in the paper, it's like people go into the Sub Rosa wearing bandanas, this horrible place. We have to call up the landlord and get them kicked out.
I've got a black bandana in my backpack that I use to wipe my hands off and wipe my spoon off after I make my tea and things like that, but I'd wash the thing before I put it over my
Make
face.
Sure you wear it next time you go to Sub Rosa.
Is a black bandana indicative that you're Black Bloc nowadays? I'll have to do something like tie-dye it.
I heard Robert say you wore white gloves.
White gloves? White gloves. And black mask?
Robert was coming out of a movie afterwards. He missed the whole revolution.
But there were a bunch of people, besides a black bandana, there were a bunch of people wearing what you would consider like masquerade mask or Zorro mask for people old enough to remember Zorro and all that. Well, actually, there was a movie rehashed recently, so everybody should know that kind of mask that just covers the eyes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
On the streets in Santa Cruz, I don't see where any of that's a problem. I did have a friend years and years ago when County Bank was where Pacific Wave is now, who went into the bank on Halloween to do trick-or-treating with a bandana on.
Oops.
And yeah, you can imagine what might have happened at that point. He wasn't thinking right. He was totally harmless. He just wasn't thinking right. Maybe he was sugar buzzed or something. Generally speaking, on the streets, for Santa Cruz to make a law barring black bandanas and masks would just be patently absurd.
Well, those days are over. I mean, it's going to be police state on all that stuff. You know, on the other side, I mean, you say they didn't accomplish anything, but I hear Alex Jones picked this up and is, putting it on his radio show and stuff. So they're getting a lot of press on this.
Didn't I compare Alex Jones to one of the
Well, we're
the,
not going to talk about Alex Jones.
Programmers here regarding... you know, the whole idea of being opportunistic, self-centric, narcissistic personality that just wants to get attention on themselves.
Well, we're talking about Robert Norris. Everyone knows that.
Oh, you said it. But, no, really, I suggest skip Alex Jones. If you really want that sort of information, go to Renscom. It's been around much longer. They weed out all the real crap and things
but
like that.
But the point I was making, they did get news. I mean, that's a lot of what Robert does, too. He got news over the sinister singing. I mean, it's you have to reach the people somehow.
So Alex Jones can afford to have a huge RSS feed with a million different RSS stuff going around. I'm sure this hit the wire somewhere as a domestic terrorism situation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's
at least if only temporarily.
They're asking for the FBI to come in, but the FBI is kind of saying they're not sure if there's been a federal crime
here.
Or not.
They're already here.
Yeah.
Speaking of provocateurish acts, and it's just my humble opinion, really. What I saw last year up at the university regarding that animal researcher that got ostensibly firebombed, although it really looks like someone squirted lighter fluid on his door like a Halloween prank or something like that. that act, whoever did it, caused the state, if it wasn't already going to happen, 2 days later or 3 days later, the state Senate voted on legitimizing a law that afforded animal researchers special protection under domestic terrorist laws and things. You got to ask, who stood to gain from doing
well,
that?
That's the thing. It is counterproductive, generally.
It cemented the vote, right? But the thing is that I think that in many of these cases, basically what's happening here is it just allows, because the people you're fighting have control of the media.
Exactly.
Always remember that. They can spin it. And no matter how many zines you put out, you will never counter their spin.
Well, the people who really use violence to get their power and keep their power,
they control the media, too.
They control the media. They control everything.
They clamp down. And all you can really do is subvert it. You can't go head-on against it. Native Americans found that out years ago. They can always bring guns. More guns, more soldiers.
Although, I mean, you know, you look at the guerrilla movements throughout the world. We're bogged down in Afghanistan right now. The most powerful military force on the planet can't win a war in a dinky little country.
Yeah, but tactical mistakes can sure be a killer. Che Guevara should have taken note that he wasn't winning support.
Right, you have to have the support of the people.
Got the hell out of there. Yeah.
Okay, we got another song.
First you told Sony, through you could we know God, and if we dared to question, then he wouldn't spare the rod. For you we worked the soil, for you we dug the moors, for you we shed our blood, fought so many pointless wars. And now you build your fences, and you say there's nothing we can do. Say the world around us belongs fairly to the few, but about 6 billion people no doubt will agree, this world is our home, not your property, it's the commons, our right of birth. And you would enclose the land all around the earth, our future is your downfall, when we cut this ball in shape. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain, with our sweat we built the railroads, built cities on these shores, but because you own the money, you say that it's all yours. We laid the phone lines and the pipelines, and then right before our eyes, you see these things our taxes paid for, you now will privatize. Privatize the hospitals, privatize the schools, privatize the prisons, for all those who break your rules. And preparing for the day when all the wells run dry, you say you own the very rain that falls down from the sky, but it's the commons, our right of birth. And you'd own the water all around the earth, our future is your downfall, when we cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain, you claim to own the harvest with your Terminator seeds, you claim to own the genome of every animal that breeds, you claim to own our culture and the music that we play, and with each song that we download to your coffers we must pay. You'd even own my name, and you'd say it's for the best, maybe you'll let us on your radio if our songs pass your test. You own country, you own western, you say you've given us a choice, you may own the airwaves, but you'll never own my voice. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you'd own the music all around the earth, our future is your downfall, when we cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain, it's the commons, our right of birth. And you who would own everything all around the earth, our future is your downfall, when we cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain.
In 1649, St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's well. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws, they were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the wasteland grow. This earth divided, we will make whole, so it can be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No one has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the lands. Now everywhere the walls rise up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. From the men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroying their corn. They were dispersed, only the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. The earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one.
We come in peace, the harder came to cut them down.
I don't understand.
Mic's on.
Hi there.
Check, 1, 2. Yeah, this thing's hot.
Yep, mics are on.
You know, I've been promised this for, I don't know, decades in terms of terrorism. They keep talking about putting LSD in the water supply, and I've got all these empty jugs at home. I'm just waiting for the terrorists to get their act together.
Doesn't work. Chlorine destroys it. Air destroys it. Being in the light destroys it after a period of time. Keep dreaming. Keep dreaming. Although, emite, nothing destroys methamphetamine.
Well, no, I don't. Amphetamines are a bad drug.
Yeah, but
diendols are a good drug.
But yeah, I know. But too many people nowadays think MDMA and all those things are really psychedelics. They're really just designer speed. And
yeah, this the, is not,
the long term effect
the same thing.
That I've seen is because I knew a lot of people that took a lot. I took a lot of LSD in the '60s, and I know a lot of people that took a lot. And honestly, in reality, they all came back down unless something really bad happened, like they got, you know, shipped off to a Bellevue while they were still tripping or something and got stuck in a really bad circumstance that way. Most people that were left to their own devices and taken care of remembered all the phone numbers, came back, and everything came back. And sometimes I could tell you a long story about a Puerto Rican guy I knew that ate up. Eventually come back down to earth. I don't see that with E. Spinning on E is just like methamphetamine. You spin, it's perma-spin.
Yeah, it's just
back.
An amphetamine. I mean, psychedelic is... It is partial, like DOM is in the same family mescalines in that family,
DOM
too.
DOM, wasn't that what they called STP at the time?
Yeah, STP.
Yeah, I got to tell you. I think I knew one person that took it. We ended up keeping him in a bathtub full of cool water for a whole night just to keep his metabolism under control. It didn't last very long because, really, a three-day peak, like you're tripping, acid peak, three-day peak just... is a bit of a burnout.
It's too
really.
Much.
Really,
yeah.
It's too much. DMT's kind of got that effect, but in the short
DMT's
term.
In the indoles, so it's a different...
Yeah, but, and also, it's like a quick flash high, but it only lasts, what?
Yeah, it's an hour. I never tried that one. But yeah, that's the amphetamine family has mescaline, DOM, and MDA, so they're not quite pure enough from my religious point of view. That the indole family of Ayahuasca, LSD, mushrooms, and...
Mescaline
is in the same family as ecstasy, yes. Chemically.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't aware of that. And, you know, I never noticed because I think one time, it was always a rare bird. I'd see my share of peyote, but at one point someone offered me some mescaline. And honestly, around here, one of the people I met a few years ago, and he's probably still living in Berkeley, but he spent some time around here, was a guy who ended up with the remnants of a psychedelic museum, which he could never afford to open, so he kept it in a storage locker. And one of the things that he acquired in this collection was PharmChem's statistical papers. PharmChem was a company in the 60s.
Yeah, I remember. They did that.
Yeah, let me recount it for listeners that may not understand. In the 60s, there was a company, I believe it was in Berkeley or the Bay Area, you could send whatever substance you had to them with a few dollars and a password.
That's right.
Old school. And a few weeks later, you could call them and they'd tell you what it was.
And how strong it was in the beginning.
And give you an assay of it, right? This fellow, they didn't keep names because even in the 60s, as you could buy all those chemicals for the psychedelics, the police agents were already infiltrating and taking names numbers and things and clamping down on it. But PharmChem did keep their stats, and they were anonymous stats. And what it turns out is when you count all the burns and all the LSD and all the stuff that really was in LSD that claimed to be in the 60s, the average dose was 25 micrograms. That was the average dose of LSD if you averaged it out across everything they ever received. That was
we're not talking about orange sunshine or window pane.
No, and honestly, And I don't want to get into detailed psychedelic discussions because I never considered myself to be that sort of psychedelic ranger. I saw the change in L at about the time of Orange Sunshine. I do not believe it was LSD. I believe it was something else. Although it may have been something on the West Coast, something different on the West Coast and on the East Coast, but I noticed, and that was in my LSD taking days, a distinct change. It was edgier. It gave you stomach cramps. And
that's probably strychnine.
Okay, let's get something clear here. You can't get enough strychnine into a tiny little pill to really do anything.
I've had blotter that had strychnine in it. It was strychnine is very bitter. LSD is completely tasteless.
Yeah. But what I suspect it was something else like ALD-52.
It could be anything,
There was also LSD-1 all the way through 32, and they had various effects on people. That was something else that my friend who kept the psychedelic, he was a psychedelic ranger till the bitter end. He was involved with a bunch of people that I'm not at liberty to discuss in regard to.
Well, you know, they're doing LSD research at MAPS up on, maybe not here in town, but MAPS up on Mission. They're starting to do research in it again. You couldn't do research in it for a long time.
As an adjunct to psychotherapy again?
Probably.
Because that's what it was initially used for. It was initially intended to be adjunct to psychotherapy for alcoholics. Bill W. of Alcoholics Anonymous was part of that program. It worked, and it worked so well that they sunk those studies so deep that no one's ever going to find paperwork on them.
It can bring out your morality more. I mean, Larry did some experiments with prisoners, and those prisoners who were in the LSD studies did not return to prison.
Yeah, well, a little guidance is an amazing thing. You show someone what their life could be like if they didn't have a seriously addictive habit or weren't a habitual criminal, and you can get them to change. Here's my story. When I left home from Brooklyn at 14 years old, I was a pretty good kid. Might have snitched a couple of my mom's cigarettes, maybe a drink out of her liquor cabinet, but she wasn't much of a drinker, so she would have noticed. But I hit the streets basically straight. Started smoking pot, started taking LSD. Sitting on those stoops of St. Mark's Place in the Village, through my psychedelicized eyes, I was looking at those junkies, winos, and speed freaks, just like you see around here. And I remember thinking to myself, that doesn't look like much fun.
No.
Why would anybody do that to themselves? And honestly, I think essentially what I did was the same thing that those psychotherapy studies were supposed to do. I can't take credit for it. I didn't know I was doing it. But somehow, that psychedelic experience and recalling that these people just didn't look like they were having any fun at all, except in the most tenuous sense of the word. Mm-hmm. Kind of kept me away from it for most of my
life. That's good.
Yeah.
It does, like I said, it does happen. And that's kind of, it's related to my religion and politics. I do believe that LSD weapons would be a great alternative to smart bombs or anything. Where we're using that in the Middle East, we would have won the war.
Should we?
It'd all be hippies.
Now, you could dose the city council.
Well, I don't. That would be terrorism. Only against the military.
It's written right here. It's absolutely clear that ganja herb is the healing of the nation. So don't have no fear. Herb cure. So why
I get another lift, I say that they carry it to another rift, yeah. They want us to feel tipsy-turvy. Puppy dog, I come pissing on your face. They don't want you to burn the sweet lemon curry. Oh my lord, keep a smile upon the children's face. Oh, you pick him up, you lick him down, you often try to run him down. The ganja man coming right back. And this the most he call me, but you pick him up, you run him down. The ganja man coming right back. And when the rain come falling, make ganja grow. Yeah. And when the sun comes shining,
Buffalo. I've got a quote and I got to credit it. This came from Fire Dog Lake in regard to a posting that they had done regarding the girl down in Mississippi that wanted to go to the prom with her same-sex friend and was refused. The quote reads, "It's sad, really. If you told America that for every dollar it gave a homeless guy, it would get $2 in return. It would still walk right by him and tell him to get a job. It's not just, I've got mine, fuck you, that's dragging this country down. It's also, I don't care if I get mine, as long as I get to say fuck you.
Precisely your point?
The point...
Yeah. Is?
There has to be a point. The point is the meanness of American society, and there's certain element to Santa Cruz that look at homelessness like that, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Through the best of times, through the worst of times, didn't make it out the bush. 236, when I step away, you thought the stalling. I thought the freedom, we believe in authority, I believe in myself.
FreakRadio.org, 101.1 FM, and that concludes the Free the Land show, pretty much. Brian's in. He'll be playing some punk rock, cracking some jokes. It's a new disc jockey here.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. I actually am officially a member of the collective this week, yes. I held out on the application. I refused to fill out the application, and finally...
Wait, we get a call. I don't know if it's time, though.
Maybe I've been kicked out.
You're no longer a member of the collective. You're fired.
No, but we want you to be a guest. Let me get the mic turned down.
Aprendimos a quererte desde la histórica altura, donde el sol de tu bravura le puso cerco a la muerte. Aquí se queda la clara, la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia. Che Guevara. paradigmas.